go to item six, presentation of the Housing Authority's audit. Raleigh.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Before you, you have the report, final audit report for the Housing Authority of Contra Costa County. And in the covering memo, we'll, you can actually turn to page two, and we'll just start with the follow-up action items that resulted from the report. A couple things that came up during this particular audit for this employer. No one in Cicero was aware that the employer actually was on a biweekly pay schedule. So what a biweekly pay schedule means is the pay dates are floating throughout the year. There's a couple months in the year that you have three pay periods. In all the time that the district, the Housing Authority, was actually submitting their reports to Cicero, it was never observed. There was no engagement, and there wasn't an awareness that they were actually doing it. They were just somehow, you know, making it work as far as the reports. Back in 2006, when we deployed CPAS, the Pension Administration System, there was actually two parts to the monthly report. You had the contribution report, which was received in our accounting office, and then you had payroll and member demographic information, the I-30 and the I-29 report, being submitted to the retirement system. Because of these two parts, one is much more difficult, takes a little bit longer to compile. The contribution report is something that they do have a system in place that they can meet the deadline of the 10th of the month. Now, when we actually looked at this, we actually saw that the reports that they were submitting, and this is for follow-up action item one on page two of the memo, there was periods of time and months that were observed that they were submitting the reports late, but we had the receivables on time, the contributions. So in the district's response with respect to the due dates, they wanted to engage the retirement system in seeing what latitude might be available to them in having some operational consideration for the due date. Now, under the board regulations, which I quoted in the response, in the report, I should say, the due dates, unless otherwise specified, so if the board felt that there was enough latitude in the board reg under that, unless otherwise specified, to engage with the employer on for an operational consideration, that's something that we think might be, you know, in order. Having looked at it, the payment, I think there were some questions at the audit committee level that whether or not there would be some financial risk, but we've been receiving the payments timely from the district. It's these other reports that hadn't been tracked, that have been submitted on a late basis that we reserved during the audit. Now, the other part of this is there's a question regarding employer certification. In the board regulations, number four under contributions and reporting, the employer needs to certify, you know, what they're submitting to Cicero by an authorized person at the district or the employer, and it has to be evidence, signature, you know, whatever, and there's an attestation. On the contribution report, there is some of the employers actually sign and deliver to us a report that's signed, but on the contribution, I-30 and I-29, reports which are submitted electronically, there's no certification attached to that. So, and that's across the board. When we went to the secure site a few years ago, and even going back to when CPAS was deployed, those reports, there's no electronic certification or follow-on certification of that data that's being submitted to the retirement system. And that's when we're talking about the employer reporting arc. It's really those two pieces that actually go together. Because even in the board reg under the due dates, it talks about the contribution reporting and also the payroll reports that go along with it.
So Riley, how hard would it be to just insert an electronic certification? I mean, we do it all the time when we sign documents electronically that just says, I hereby certify, and the person types in their name and the date.
I think that's something, having discussed this with staff.
Okay, because to me that seems the simple solution. With regard to the the due dates, I would really like us to look at coming up with a system to deal with a biweekly pay schedule. It's very possible, if the county ever gets to the point where we have a truly electronic payroll, which seems a great impossibility, but it's possible that we could be on a biweekly, and to me, it would be nice to come up with a system that works almost as a trial basis, you know, let's have this as a test, see how it works, and I could see other agencies shifting to it, because most people outside of government are on a biweekly pay schedule. And I do have to state, just for the record, I do sit on the Housing Authority. That's one of the roles of the Board of Supervisors, so I am. But I'm wearing my SACERA hat, and to me, it doesn't make any sense to make an agency scramble if we can make it work within our system to deal with the biweekly. It's only twice a year, like you said, that you get those two extra pay periods. So I think coming up with a system to allow that would make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think if you recall a previous employer audit, the Superior Courts actually has had to address this issue. And the accommodation, if you recall, that they were by December 15th of every year, they're to submit a payroll due date, reporting due date schedule to us. Now, that was a practice that was informally being done, and it had gone back and forth and been revisited over the years. But after the employer audit, we wanted to make sure that we had it codified, so we had something to rest on. That, you know, the expectation from the retirement system was communicated, and then also that we had a agreed upon due date for the payment schedule or the submission schedule for them every year. Certainly we were aware of the Superior Court. We did not know until we actually did this audit that the Housing Authority was on a biweekly schedule.
And as Raleigh mentioned at the last audit committee meeting, we did have a discussion around this. Mm-hmm. And it's our intention, we're working on something to bring back to the audit committee in November, and then possibly have something to the full board back in December.
So
I did want to address, you know, that the Housing Authority did request this extension for all, you know, employers that have that same reporting.
The other thing that's kind of interesting about that, it makes sense to me to see if we can accommodate them as well. But also, looking at the compliance regulation section 4, it clearly assumes, in terms of the ramifications of this, that the reports and dues are both tardy, because it goes on to suggest that SACERA may have the authority then to apply fines and penalties and whatnot. And the presumption then is that the dues were tardy. In this case, the dues were not untardy.
Yeah.
So it sort of suggests that we're going to apply a financial penalty for late reports, which I think we should think about revising this regulation as well.
I think that that could definitely be a piece of it, but I would, you know, I wasn't here back when this was put in place, but I would think that they were also thinking about reporting, because that can have an administrative impact, and, you know, putting a little bit more teeth into it. I think that that's probably how the penalty.
I agree. It's just that the presumption here is that they are hand in glove, and that they, if one was late, then both were late.
Yeah.
So I think we need to see if we can inject some flexibility into the regulations too.
Yeah, I think when you actually look at the actual wording, no later than the 10th of the month for the previous month's payroll, and shall be accompanied by the member and employer contributions. So what that other report might be, what's being defined over time. We've communicated the specifications for the demographic file that needs to be submitted. You know, then that might change over time as new requirements come up. So I think there needs to be some latitude there, so to allow for administrative changes over time. But I think that having a little bit more clarity, I think, would assist, yeah, definitely. Any other questions about the first?
You could, in a very simple way, just put a clause in that says something along the lines of, unless management and of the two organizations, ourselves and whoever is on the other side, agree to an alternative schedule. Stop. So you've got a basic standard, but you've got the ability to make it flexible if you need to.
So Candace's comment on electronic signatures kind of just made me think. So currently, I know for our agency, we submit the I-29, I-30, and we also submit it in paper, and they do sign a certification. Are we eventually going to be moving away from the paper piece and have it be all electronic, or is that something you anticipate carrying forward?
I would defer that to the operations side, member services. I think they'd have to take a look at what capabilities are available with the current pension administration system, and then what the new business rules and requirements and asks and wants that we want in any future system. So I think I'd defer to the operational side for that.
I just want to mention the last time we brought an audit report to the board, there was a recent request about including a summary on top of the report. So I just wanted to touch base and see if there was any additional comments regarding the format.
Having it spelled out at the front. It kept it simple. I knew what to look for, and then could keep reading if I wanted more detail. So.
Totally agree.
It is a good format.
Okay. Yeah.
It varied from audit to audit a little bit, but I like the revised format. Okay. I thought it was responsive.
Pat yourself on the back because it was your suggestion.
From a fine committee, that's something that they would encourage.
Okay. It does make it easier.
It does. So for the first follow-up item, that's something that we'll work with staff and the employer and employer's staff to engage and have those discussions. And then, as Gail mentioned, we'll have an item coming back to the audit committee and the board next month in a future board meeting. For the follow-up item number two, this related to the demographic information, and at the time the employer responded appropriately. At the time that the new pension system was deployed, some of those items were communicated to them as not being hard data points, or they would be optional. However, over the years, the utility, as we continue to build new reports and be able to do compensation reviews to ensure that only pensionable compensation is coming in, the demographic information that we noted in the audit report, allows us to put the employee in the appropriate bucket, job title, labor agreement. So then when we're doing reporting on compensation, we can see that whether that individual is truly eligible or not based on the labor agreement. So things have changed quite a bit over the last 12 years as far as what staff needs to do on ongoing monitoring. At the time of the report, the employer had responded that just after we did the on-site and for that next month, they had actually submitted an updated demographic file, because quite a bit of the information was missing. They just hadn't been informed that needed to be submitted. So as far as their response to submitting it, I believe that we've received a good amount of the information that was outstanding at the time of the audit. And then for item number three, that's something regarding the trending and tracking for annual pensionable compensation limits. Up until the time that the audit was performed, they had an awareness of it, but they didn't have a tool that would give them or flag when a compensation limit had been reached. So what they proposed to do is they now have a process in place to track that, so they wouldn't be submitting a report and then having to do a correction or an adjustment in the following month after the compensation limit had been submitted. So the way the tool is designed and their proposed way of tracking it, it looks like it would be pretty effective going forward. So it's just something that we'll track as time goes on. And then for item number four, we were able to actually reconcile the small amounts. So between the time we did the preliminary report and the final audit report, the small variances that were noted in the audit were identified and had been reconciled on the pension administration system. So that was no longer outstanding. Any other questions about the housing audit?
Okay. And is any representative from them here?
No.
Other than Candace?
Representing the housing authority today. Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm sorry, Joseph here, and he's staff. So.
Yeah. I know.
Smooth things over so well, they didn't feel the need to come.
Just wanted to give them the opportunity if they had anything to add.
And having talked to John Hunter, who's the finance director, and Zach, their McCaslin, their internal auditor, very cooperative. They just a fount of information. They've been with the organization for a very long time, so. I know that the last discussions we had were very productive, and they were very on board with what we were trying to do here. So the feedback from the audit was very good.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. So with that, we'll go.